Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of March 2, 2020. We begin our reading today with an article on the front page of the Ford County Record entitled, Paxton Votes to Buy Truck, Looks at Sidewalk Replacement Issues. From Paxton, a discussion about purchasing a new truck evolved into a talk how to do more sidewalk replacement in town. The Paxton City Council voted to buy a one-ton diesel truck. The Ford truck itself will be purchased from Warden Martin in Champaign for $40,320. The addition of a stainless dump bed and snowplow will cost an additional $19,000. It will be paid for with budgeted new vehicle funds of $46,000 in the park and street departments, but also $13,500 in the curb and sidewalk fund. When Alderman Mike Wilson asked Public Works head Mark LeClaire how much sidewalk replacement was done the past year, LeClaire said, none. LeClaire said his crews didn't have time and that it was a very rainy spring and early summer. He assured the council that another $40,000 can be budgeted for sidewalks in the fiscal year that begins May 1. To Alderman's questions about perhaps hiring the work out, LeClaire answered that they would be shocked at the cost of doing that. Alderman Rob Pacey said he didn't want to see short-term need, the truck, interfere with long-term need. Let's get this figured out, said Wilson. Also, the council approved spending $26,041 for the materials for a new salt storage bin. The city will pay Clearspan of South Windsor, Connecticut, $14,223 for the metal and canvas for an arch-topped 48-by-42-foot metal building. It will sit on large concrete blocks that will cost $4,500. Concrete for footings will cost $7,300. LeClaire said he hopes city employees can construct the building. The old structure is in very poor shape. LeClaire also told the council he expects the replacement or rebuilding of a 75-horsepower pump at the Chestnut Street lift station to cost more than $30,000. He said the city engineer is working on estimates for this year's motor fuel tax project and that LeClaire himself is figuring out what streets could be paved using a local contractor and general fund money. Mayor Bill Ingold updated the council on the purchase of the city airport that is to be completed this next month. Next, we have three stories that were submitted by the Ford County Public Health Department to the paper. The first one headline is, Health Department encourages residents to stay informed, take preventative steps during Coronavirus Disease 2019. Coronavirus Disease 2019, COVID-19, is a respiratory illness that can spread from person to person. The viruses that cause COVID-19 is a novel coronavirus named Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus 2, or SARS-CoV-2. It was first identified during an investigation into an outbreak in Wuhan, China. COVID-19 is spreading from person to person in China, and limited spread among close contacts has been detected in some countries outside China, including the United States. Currently, however, this virus is not spreading in communities in the United States, and the health risk to the general public remains low in both the U.S. and in Illinois. What are the symptoms? People who get sick with COVID-19 develop mild to severe respiratory illness with symptoms of fever, cough, difficulty breathing. COVID-19 symptoms are similar to those of the influenza, the flu, and the current outbreak is occurring during a time of year when respiratory illnesses from the flu and other viruses are highly prevalent. Who should be tested for COVID-19? Individuals who have symptoms listed above and have traveled to China or countries with one apparent community spread or have come in close contact with someone with COVID-19, on these people should be seen by a doctor or medical professional. Before seeking medical care, they should consult with their provider to make arrangements to prevent possible transmission in the healthcare setting. What steps can be taken to protect yourself and your family? Currently, there is no vaccine to prevent COVID-19. Because COVID-19 has not been found to be spreading widely in the United States, there are no additional precautions recommended for the general public to take. The best way to prevent illness is to avoid being exposed to the virus. However, there are everyday actions that can help prevent the spread of respiratory illnesses, including COVID-19 and seasonal flu. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, especially after going to the bathroom, before eating, and after blowing your nose, coughing, or sneezing. If soap and water are not available, use an alcohol-based sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. When possible, stay home when you are sick except to get medical care. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue, then throw the tissue in the trash. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects such as countertops, tables, doorknobs, faucets, phones, and keyboards using a regular household cleaning spray or wipe. While COVID-19 is a public health concern, Ford County Public Health Department wants to remind residents that avoiding the flu and avoiding spreading it should also be a top priority. It is never too late to get a flu shot. The Ford County Public Health Department offers the flu vaccine by appointment, which can be arranged by contacting the Ford County Public Health Department's office at 217-379-9281. For the most current information on COVID-19, visit the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, website. Additionally, the Illinois Department of Public Health, the IDPH, is in coordination with the Illinois Poison Control Center, launched the Illinois Novel Coronavirus Hotline. Illinoisans can dial 1-800-889-3931 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or email dph.sick@illinois.gov to get their questions answered. Also from the Health Department, Illinois taking preventative action to limit spread of coronavirus. Springfield. The Illinois Department of Public Health, IDPH, is working with local, state, and federal health partners to take all preventative steps available to limit the spread of the coronavirus 2019, COVID-19. While COVID-19 is not spreading in communities in Illinois or in the U.S., there is evidence of community spread in several countries around the world, and IDPH is committed to working across local, state, and federal agencies to ensure Illinois is prepared. IDPH is currently conducting hospital assessments to determine all available capacity in the event more people need medical care. Illinois Department of Public Health is also assessing the availability of personal protective equipment, such as gloves, gowns, and masks for healthcare workers. Earlier this month, Illinois became the first state to provide COVID-19 testing in-state, and IDPH is continuing to work on increasing capacity for testing to ensure rapid results. As additional cases of COVID-19 are diagnosed in an increasing number of countries, the Illinois Department of Public Health is working with healthcare providers and local public health officials, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and other state agencies to coordinate a robust response and to take every possible step we can to prepare, said Illinois Department of Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Elzik. Illinois has already led the charge, becoming the first state to be able to test for COVID-19 at state laboratories. As we move forward, we are working across city, state, and federal agencies to identify all available resources and ensure we are using every tool to keep our communities safe. Since January 2020, IDPH has worked closely with local, state, and federal partners to successfully contain the virus in Illinois, with only 2 confirmed cases. Efforts have included implementing testing for COVID-19 in Illinois, becoming the first state to do so. setting up a statewide hotline for questions about coronavirus, providing guidance and recommendations to local health departments, hospitals, EMS, clinicians, and other partners in a variety of areas. Assessment for COVID-19 in patients based on risk due to travel or close contact to a confined area. Evaluation and reporting persons under investigation. Infection control practices. Precautions for schools, universities, colleges, and students. Isolation and quarantine. Prevention steps for caregivers and close contacts. Specimen submission and testing. Recommended strategies for personal protective equipment use, emergency department call triage, emergency medical service and 911 call center response, and providing routine briefings to the General Assembly, and communicating with the public by creating a coronavirus disease webpage, issuing new releases, hosting press conferences, conducting interviews, and providing information on social media. While efforts to contain the number of COVID-19 county cases will continue, Illinois will also utilize community mitigation strategies. Community mitigation aims to allow the spread of a novel virus in communities using non-pharmaceutical interventions, better known as everyday preventive actions, including staying home when sick, covering coughs and sneezes, frequent hand washing, routine cleaning of frequently touched surfaces and objects. In the absence of medications or vaccines, community mitigation measures are the first line of defense against highly transmittable infectious diseases. Preventive actions should also be practiced by Illinoisans at all times, but especially as we continue to monitor potential spread of a new virus. For more information about how you can prepare for the spread of the virus and steps you can take to stay healthy, visit www.cdc.gov. While these materials reference influenza, the information actions you can take to prepare yourself and your community still apply at home, at school, at work, and at a gathering. The article we just read said there were two cases of COVID-19 in Illinois. The article was dated March 4th. As of today, March 6th, there are 5 cases of COVID-19 in Illinois. With all the interest in the coronavirus, I'm going to do something I've never done before on this reading. I'm going to turn to an article from another paper, from the Chicago Tribune, and this was in today's paper. And it's entitled, Understanding the New Coronavirus is Key to Figuring Out How to Stop It. Scientists at Argonne Lab are working on it. In a secure lab about 25 miles southwest of Chicago, a powerful X-ray beam is pointed toward a crystal grown from a coronavirus protein. Stuck on the end of what looks like a long needle attached to a robot arm, the crystal is barely visible to the naked eye. Nearby, scientists hover around computer screens, looking at the magnified crystal along with brightly colored 3D models of the corona protein. The researchers have come to Argonne National Laboratory from the University of Chicago, Northwestern University, Purdue University, and other academic research institutions to unravel the mysteries of this newest strain of the coronavirus, which causes a disease called COVID-19. The data they gather could be used to develop drugs to fight the virus, but any treatment could be at least a year away. The X-ray beam at Argonne, a library in Lamont owned by the Department of Energy, is powerful enough to show researchers the atomic structure of a corona's protein. Figure out how the structure of the proteins, and scientists can figure out how the virus infects cells in the body. Then researchers can find a way to treat it before the virus becomes severe. The point of doing this is really to understand what they do, how they do it, and how to stop them, said Carolina Mishtaka, a University of Chicago researcher and protein crystallographer at Argonne. This isn't merely an academic exercise. COVID-19 has killed about 3,200 people worldwide, according to the World Health Organization. The outbreak began late last year in Wuhan, China, and is spreading around the world. In the U.S., fears surrounding the virus have sent stocks plunging, Airlines have slashed international and domestic flights, major conferences have been canceled, and supply chains have been disrupted. Chicago area Catholic churches have even changed mass practices to reduce the potential spread of the virus. 5 people have tested positive for COVID-19 in Illinois. The respiratory virus causes pneumonia in some patients and is spread through coughing and sneezing. The research underway at Argonne is through a consortium, the Center for Structural Genomics of Infectious Diseases, which studies infectious diseases and responds to outbreaks. It is funded by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, part of the National Institute of Health. When there's an outbreak, such as a coronavirus, the research community mobilizes immediately, said Tony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Within weeks of the initial outbreak, a test to diagnose COVID-19 was developed, Fauci said. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention distributed test kits to various labs last month, including a Chicago lab run by the Illinois Department of Public Health. There is no specific drug developed yet to treat the coronavirus, Fauci said. In such a case, researchers may either work toward developing a drug or find a new one that can be repurposed. Pharmaceutical companies have entered the effort as well. Takeda Pharmaceutical Company announced Wednesday that it was starting development of a drug to treat high-risk individuals with COVID-19. The Japanese drug maker, which earlier this year closed its Deerfield headquarters, also said it would study drugs it already has on the market to see if they can be effective in treating infected patients. In late January, AbbVie donated a supply of HIV/AIDS treatment and prevention drug to Chinese health officials for use as an experimental treatment option. The North Chicago-based drug maker said it is also exploring potential collaborations with a public-private partnership called the Innovative Medicines Initiative to further research COVID-19 treatment options. With more research needed to be followed by product development and clinical trials, experts say it could be more than a year before a drug is available. People expect the results to come out very quickly, said Argonne's Michalaka. The research takes time. There is hope that lessons learned from the 2003 outbreak of SARS, another strain of coronavirus, could prove useful in treating COVID-19. The SARS epidemic affected 26 countries and resulted in more than 8,000 cases, according to the World Health Organization. Proper infection control practices brought the outbreak under control within months. Ideally, a drug that was in development for SARS could treat the new strain of coronavirus, but some tweaks might be necessary, said Dr. Kara Satchel, professor of microbiology and immunology at Northwestern University and co-principal investigator for the Center for Structural Genomics of Infectious Diseases. The new coronavirus is comprised of 28 different proteins, and the consortium of researchers is working to map them all. So far, they've figured out 4 of the proteins. Argonne does not have the coronavirus itself at its facilities, just the individual proteins that make up the virus. Michalaka sat in front of a computer screen at Argonne earlier this week, showing a reporter a 3D model of one of the recently mapped proteins. The proteins were displayed in bright colors on the model, like bubblegum, pink, magenta, turquoise, and grouped together to form a structure full of peaks and crevices. Michalaka used a computer mouse to spin the model on the screen to show how the proteins bond. She flipped the model around to show one specific protein. The model identified the spot on the protein that a potential drug molecule could bind to, potentially making the virus weaker or preventing it from replicating in the body. The work is like trying to find puzzle pieces that fit together, said Andy Meskar, a biochemistry professor who is leading the coronavirus research at Purdue. And if researchers can't find a puzzle piece that fits? That's where chemistry come in, Meskar said. In order to get those drugs, we will synthesize different chemical versions of the puzzle piece of that molecule until it fits in perfectly. Many of the proteins in the new coronavirus are similar to proteins in SARS. The protein most recently mapped at Argonne is 89% identical to a protein in SARS, for example. Purdue is already working with potential drug molecules, Masker said. The eventual drug could move into clinical trials in 2 years. We had some ideas of what compounds would work because of SARS. We took our knowledge from that and instantly applied them to our work here, he said. This is pandemic preparedness. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record for Wednesday, March 4, 2020. Thomas Craig Tom Schult. Thomas Craig Tom Schult, 62, of Buckley, died at 2:03 a.m. Tuesday, February 25, 2020, at his home, surrounded by his family. Funeral services were held Sunday, March 1, 2020, at St. John's Lutheran Church, with the Reverend J. Kevin Wyckoff officiating. Burial followed in St. John's Cemetery. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, memorials may be made to Christ Lutheran High School, St. John's Lutheran Church in Buckley, or an organization of the donor's choice. James Anthony Jim Barbier, and that last name is spelled B-A-R-B-I-E-U-R. James Anthony Jim Barbier, 87, of Bales Lake, Lota, passed away at 10:12 p.m. Sunday, February 23, 2020, at his home. A mass of Christian burial was held Friday, February 28, at St. Joseph Catholic Church, with the Reverend Father Dong Van Bui officiating. Burial followed in Glen Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Gibson Area Ambulance Service or St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Loda. Ronald Thomas Moore. Ronald Thomas Moore, 79, of Gibson City, peacefully passed away at 4:05 p.m. Tuesday, February 25, 2020, at Advocate Broman Medical Center in Bloomington, with his family at his side. Funeral services were held Tuesday, March 3, at Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City, with Kenny Chemley officiating. Burial with full military honors followed at the Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to the Mayo Clinic Alzheimer's Disease Research Center or Advocate Hospice Foundation. Dorothy E. Young. Dorothy E. Young, 87, of Cisna Park, passed away on Friday, February 28, 2020, at Allocade Healthcare of Paxton. Visitation will be from 12:30 until the 2 p.m. funeral service on Sunday, March 8, 2020, at Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park. The Reverend Tim Hahn will officiate. Burial will follow at Trinity Lutheran Cemetery in Cisna Park. Memorials may be made to the Cisna Park Fire Department, Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park, or the family's wishes. Mary Margaret Graham. Mary Margaret Graham, 95, died on Sunday, March 1, 2020, at Holy Cross Village, Notre Dame, Indiana, where she had resided for many years. Funeral Mass was held Wednesday, March 1, at St. Mary Catholic Church in Champaign. Burial followed at Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Memorials may be made to Holy Cross Village in Notre Dame, Indiana, or to a charity of the donor's choice. We return to the news with a story entitled, Short Shows There's Nothing Down About Down Syndrome. Wesley Short may be young, but he's already working on getting a message across. He's become an ambassador for the not-for-profit organization, Nothing Down. Wesley is nearly 2 years old, born April 4, 2018, and he has Down syndrome. His mother, Kaylee, explained that being an ambassador for Nothing Down means the organization will be using Wesley's photos, videos, and milestones on its social media pages and website to encourage and educate people around the world that there is really nothing down about Down syndrome. She said he will be given first opportunity at being included in their photo shoots and any projects or films they produce. They have a 6-time award-winning short film called Dear Doctor, and this year they will be debuting their follow-up, Dear World, featuring Frank Stevens, an actor and athlete with Down syndrome, who became an international internet superstar for his speech on Capitol Hill, where he spoke on behalf of the entire Down syndrome community. Kaylee said she came across Nothing Down while building an online Down syndrome community. "I knew little about the genetic condition, so I began reaching out to other parents on social media. Nothing Down was a godsend for me. For the first time, I felt like I wasn't entirely alone in this. There were thousands and thousands of other parents here advocating for their children the way I knew I would. Thousands of similar stories and experiences that matched mine. One thing that is unfortunately common in our community is the negative stigma and bleak outlook given by medical professionals when delivering the diagnosis. That is what Nothing Down's mission is, to get rid of all the gloom and doom and stigma associated with Down syndrome. We hope for a world where instead of they can't, they won't conversations that occur at birth diagnosis, as well as abortion pushing, you have options conversations in gestational diagnoses, there's simply a congratulations. Wesley, being born with Down syndrome, was a surprise to his family. We had a completely typical pregnancy and no indications of any genetic disorder, though I did not opt to have any screening done because I knew it wouldn't matter to me either way. I did have strong maternal instincts throughout my pregnancy. Something was going to be different, but the thought of Down syndrome specifically never crossed my mind. It wasn't until the day after Wes was born that the doctor sat me down to discuss concerns about his overall health and the possibility of the genetic condition. He was taken by ambulance to a bigger hospital's NICU unit, where he was put on a feeding tube, had an IV in his head, oxygen, and a radiant warmer. He couldn't suck and swallow correctly, and his body temp and oxygen levels were very low. The doctors also discovered a tiny hole in his heart, known as an arterial septum defect. Wesley made strides daily and was out of the NICU unit and home a week after his birth. For 3 weeks, I waited by the phone for the results from his genetic testing. I was finally given a definite yes over the phone and was told to schedule an appointment with the genetic counselor. This ended up being an awful experience for me. I sat in a small doctor's office by myself with this tiny newborn baby and listened to this duo of geneticists tell me everything my son wouldn't ever do, how little to expect from him, and how likely he is to live past 50. Kaylee wishes she knew then what she knows now. I remember when I went public with Wesley's diagnosis. I wrote a lengthy Facebook post explaining and praying I didn't receive a bunch of I'm sorries. If I knew then how amazing he was going to be, how he would shape us into new people, change hearts, if I knew the overwhelming everyday joy he would bring, the way people, total strangers even, would become magnetized to him because of his ridiculously beautiful smile and love for others, I would have skipped the long, sappy post. I would have simply said, oh, by the way, Wes has Down syndrome. Because now, almost 2 years later in his journey, I realize that that's really it. He has Down syndrome. He is not Down syndrome. He's not a fact or a statistic. No one can predict his future. Like any other typical child, we don't know where he'll excel or what areas he'll find difficult. He's still just a little guy. All I do know is he's incredibly intelligent, super fast, and incredibly loving and rocking that extra chromosome. I do know he has years and years ahead of him, and he's going to be a successful, beautiful, kind member of society. Wesley loves music and dancing. Learning new signs, as American Sign Language is his current form of communication, his proud mother said. He likes playing and singing, swimming and, given sugar, hugs and kisses. He'll do just about anything for pizza and loves to wrestle with his older siblings. Wesley's blended family includes two big sisters, Kenzie Keller, 10, and Caitlin Short, 9, and two big brothers, Joel, 11, and Alex Short, 13. He's really your typical two-year-old, all-boy toddler. World Down Syndrome Day is March 21st, 321, because Down syndrome is the result of a third copy of the 21st chromosome, Kaylee said. Wesley's accomplishments can be followed on Facebook at Wesley's Warriors and Nothing Down has its own Facebook page. And that's all the time we have for today's reading. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon. Website.